5 accretion disk. Humanity's sun, if placed on this disk, would be nothing more than a speck of dust upon a vinyl record. Tianming realized that the disk was so thin as to be two-dimensional. Like a record, it spun slowly around the black hole. He approached the disk to examine it in more detail and saw that it was inscribed with a massive picture that portrayed every stellar system in the universe in astounding detail. Coming closer, he could discern individual spaceships and odd-looking extraterrestrials. Every detail of every object was perfectly captured in this picture, though it was all lifeless. Tianming felt a powerful force tugging at him, trying to drag him into the picture. He struggled to get away, but the irresistible force, like a magical spell, gradually pulled him down toward this two-dimensional plane. He fought hard, and at last escaped the mysterious spell and departed the surface of the accretion disk. But immediately he fell into the frightening black hole, passed through the event horizon, and plunged into the lightless abyss. In the darkness, he saw a ghostly fire, and by its light, a warlock wearing a black cape and a pointy hat, and grinning viciously. He was busily painting on a large scroll, which he unfurled and pushed out of the black hole as he filled it with his work. The unrolling sheet of paper joined the accretion disk, and he saw that the sun, the moon, and the earth had all been painted into the picture. The warlock glanced at him, and instantly an image of Tianming appeared in the painting, including each strand of his hair, each wrinkle in his skin, even the frightened expression in his eyes. He was then pulled into the image, merging with his own two-dimensional portrait. Tianming screamed and woke from his nightmare. "Some have already been dimension reduced. Others are being dimension reduced. Still others will be dimension reduced. Until finally, this is all part of their plan." Snatches of his conversation with the spirit peeked out of a hidden part of his mind, almost forgotten. And suddenly he understood the meaning of the dream.
"Dimensional strike!"
AA's voice quavered. She recalled the terrible sight of the solar system's collapse. Flattened Neptune and Saturn like a pair of eyes. The space cities whose every detail had been preserved in two dimensions. Snowflakes bigger than the moon. Tianming's absurd dream had become reality, and that reality was even more terrifying than the nightmare. Tianming nodded, his expression grave.
"If your dream was really a message from the spirit, then the effects of the two-dimensional foil will never end. Does that mean—"
She shuddered in horror.
"That the whole universe will eventually be only two dimensions."
"Not only that," Tianming sighed. "The spirit told me that our own three-dimensional space is the result of a dimensional strike. The original universe was of a higher dimension."
"So you're saying—"
Although what Tianming was suggesting wasn't hard to understand, it was simply too incredible to accept.
"The universe was originally four-dimensional. Those four-dimensional fragments were how things used to be?"
She recalled the words of the ring. "When the sea is drying, the fish have to gather into a puddle. The puddle is also drying, and all the fish are going to disappear. Not four-dimensional, but ten-dimensional," Tianming said. "The four-dimensional universe is itself the result of many other dimensional strikes. The ten-dimensional universe was the perfect world that was the home of the spirit. Pythagoras called 10 the perfect number. And now I finally understand what he meant."
10 dimensions?
AA was only mildly surprised. For her, the difference between 4 dimensions and 10 was just an abstract difference between two numbers. Human scientists had already discovered that fundamental particles have 10 dimensions, though only 3 dimensions are fully extended, with the rest curled up within the quantum realm. Scientists had proposed many theories explaining this fact, but they never guessed that this was the result of intelligent life waging destructive warfare, which led to the collapse of the fundamental structure of the universe. AA thought of a more practical question.
Do you think the Lurker was responsible for the dimensional strike against the solar system?
I'm not sure. Tianming thought about this some more. It's possible that other advanced civilizations can also produce dimension reduction weapons for dark forest attacks. But I can guess that the goal of the Lurker is to reduce the dimensions of the cosmos.
Why?
AA asked.
I don't know.
Tianming let out a long sigh.
That's probably the biggest mystery in the universe.
Do you remember the Sofon blind zones? IAA nodded. Blind zones were mysterious regions of space that caused the Sofons to lose their power, and they could be found all over the universe. As an astronomer, she was very familiar with them.
What do you think the universe would be like without such blind zones?
AA shuddered. This hypothetical once had very practical implications. At the beginning of the Deterrence Era, scholars debated the question of whether the dark forest state applied across the whole universe. One influential group of scholars believed that any species that reached the technology level of the Trisolarans should possess the power to produce Sofons or Sofon-like communication techniques that relied on quantum entanglement. After billions of years, the most advanced civilization should be able to send Sofons to every corner of the universe, and with instant communication being available everywhere, the dark forest state should not persist. They believed that the threat of dark forest strikes that worried both humans and Trisolarans were only a phenomenon local to this part of the universe that had been improperly assumed to be universal. The discovery of the blind zones negated their theory. A variety of evidence indicated that the blind zones were the result of artifice rather than nature. They darkened the universe and eliminated the hope of instant communication. Therefore, the dark forest state probably did persist everywhere. The blind zones also pose challenges to dark forest theory. Imagine, if a civilization was powerful enough to establish blind zones across the universe, then such a civilization was also capable of influencing the whole universe. Such a civilization had no need to establish blind zones at all. It could simply use Sofon-like technology to surveil and monitor the entire cosmos and slaughter any baby civilizations as they appeared, thereby achieving perfect security. Unless it had some other goal in mind.
Is it possible that the Lurker is responsible for setting up blind zones everywhere, thus ensuring the dark forest state persists in the universe?
AA voiced the most terrifying possibility of all.
I have no idea, Tianming replied, but it is possible.
Without a universe-spanning, super-advanced civilization going around to set up these barriers, it's unlikely that the dark forest would still be with us. But if that was what really happened, it must have been an unimaginably evil civilization. Not only did it destroy Eden, but it also treated the whole universe as its plaything. Could Satan be real? They continued to discuss and debate clues regarding the identity of the Lurker without coming to any conclusions. It was possible that even more knowledge was buried in Tianming's mind, but even now he could recall only a few fragments here and there. The deepest secrets of the universe were still hidden. After a while, AA asked,
"Did you make up that story about Princess Dewdrop and Prince Deepwater to warn humanity about dimensional strikes?"
"I didn't make up all of it. Like I said, Some parts of that story came from my dream.
Why didn't the Trisolarans suspect you? The metaphor in the fairy tale was so transparent.
One of the biggest weaknesses of the Trisolarans is their lack of imagination, Tianming explained. If they already knew about dimensional strikes, then they might have been able to see through my story. But they had no knowledge of it at all. If even humans couldn't solve my riddle, the Trisolarans had no hope at all. They had no experiences to draw on. Tianming didn't tell the Trisolarans what he had figured out, because he couldn't see how the reality of the universe's loss of dimensions could contribute to solving the conflict between the Trisolarans and the humans. The Trisolarans had scanned this dream, but among numerous other strange dreams Tianming had had, it didn't stand out. The Trisolarans couldn't figure out the true meaning of the dream, and Tianming wasn't going to help them. Then, more than a year later, the Trisolaran fleet finally received news of gravity's broadcast. The plan to invade Earth had to be abandoned, because both the Earth's and Trisolaris's locations had been exposed. Though Tianming no longer had to bear the moral responsibility for the destruction of Earth by the Trisolaran invasion, he realized that he had been burdened with an even heavier duty: saving humanity from the dark forest strikes that would be launched by more advanced civilizations. Although the spirit had come from the 10-dimensional universe, it had extensive knowledge of the 3-dimensional universe as well. It informed Tianming of 7 possible types of dark forest attacks. The 2-dimensional foil was one of the more advanced techniques. During the year after his encounter with the spirit, Tianming was able to gradually recall the spirit's teachings of all 7 techniques. The Trisolarans made it a priority to obtain the valuable intelligence from Tianming to prepare defenses, and he shared 6 of the techniques with them. However, he kept dimensional strikes a secret from them, instinctively feeling that this was the technique most likely to be used against the solar system. He also knew that if he revealed all that he knew to the Trisolarans, they weren't going to pass on the knowledge to the humans in the solar system, nor would they permit him to contact them. In exchange for informing the Trisolarans of 6 dark forest attack techniques, Tianming extracted from them the precious opportunity to meet Cheng Xin through the Sofons at a distance. During their meeting, he carefully mixed his dream with other elements and created 3 fairy tales for Cheng Xin. He constructed elaborate metaphors to conceal the intelligence concerning the black domain and curvature propulsion, but the rather naked description of dimensional strikes was beyond Trisolaran knowledge and understanding.
But what if you had guessed wrong, and advanced civilizations didn't launch a dimensional strike against the Earth, but used one of the other techniques?
AA asked. It wouldn't have been a big deal. Light-speed ships fast enough to escape a dimensional strike would have been sufficient to escape the other techniques. This was the safest way. I couldn't pack everything into my stories, and so I had to pick the most critical details.
But there's another problem. During your meeting, you said that you and Cheng Xin knew each other from childhood and often told each other stories. But if the Trisolarans could look through your memories, wouldn't that lie have stood out?
For personal reasons, IAA had long wanted to ask this question, but she hadn't dared to probe too deeply into Tianming's memories. Now she finally asked, but it wasn't for herself. It was for... Tianming gazed up at the dark dome of the sky and thought of the past that already seemed to belong to another self, a self that had died long ago. Softly, he said,
"That wasn't entirely a lie. I did know a girl like that."
When Yun Tianming was a child, a girl briefly appeared in his life. A neighbor's niece, she was 3 years younger than he. One summer break, she came to his city to visit her aunt and got to know Tianming, who often recounted to her stories he had read in books: the Trojan War, King Solomon's treasures, the Knights of the Round Table,
The Merchant of Venice, and so on. Most of these had come from the thick books his classics-worshipping parents had made him read. The girl also told him many stories she had made up. The Naughty Prince, The Clever Princess, The Happy Pudgy Pig, and so on. She was too young to create coherent plots, and some of these were barely stories at all. Tian Ming loved listening to her. He had no friends, and his parents refused to let him play with children whose families his parents thought low class. Tian Ming's parents disliked his spending so much time with this girl because he was in middle school and they wanted him to focus on his studies. However, by then his parents were in the midst of their own messy divorce and couldn't spare the energy to keep a close eye on him. The girl stayed in Tian Ming's city for only a month. At the end of summer break, before she returned home, the two promised to see each other the next summer. However, not long after, Tian Ming's parents finalized their divorce, and he moved away with his father. He never saw the girl again. Even more socially isolated, he retreated into himself and sealed away those memories. But the young girl left him a trace of warmth from his childhood, and the stories the girl told him were the prototypes for the fairy tales that he later told Cheng Xin.
To kill Princess Dewdrop, Prince Evil used black magic. Many, many meteors fell from the sky. The little fairy descended to Earth to protect her and made a magic umbrella out of clouds to protect the princess from the falling rocks. Later, the little fairy, the princess, and the captain of the guards went to No Worry Island, where they found Prince Tall Mountain. The prince had also learned magic, and he could make himself as big as a mountain or as tiny as a grain of sand. Prince Tall Mountain killed Prince Evil, and then the princess and the captain lived happily ever after. Prince Tall Mountain and the little fairy also left the kingdom and returned to No Worry Island, where they married.
Tian Ming could still vaguely recall the serious, childish face of the girl as she told him stories. He also remembered asking,
"Why didn't Prince Tall Mountain marry Princess Dewdrop?"
"Ah, you weren't listening,"
the girl pouted.
"Prince Tall Mountain is Dewdrop's brother. That's why Prince Tall Mountain has to end up with the little fairy, and Princess Dewdrop has to end up with the captain."
There was little resemblance between this young girl and Cheng Xin. But after meeting Cheng Xin, Tian Ming sometimes fantasized that they had known each other when they were very young and lost touch as they grew up. He projected the image of Cheng Xin into his childhood memories, and the girl he had known briefly one summer became the image of young Cheng Xin. The Tri-Solaran's understanding of his memories did not extend to differences this subtle. As Tian Ming deliberately confused his own memories, he persuaded the Tri-Solarans that he and Cheng Xin did know each other as children, and the Tri-Solarans didn't detect his misleading memory edits.
"What about that young girl?"
A.A. asked, a tremor creeping into her voice.
Did you ever see her again?"
"No. The world is so large, what are the chances of meeting her again? I can't even remember her name. I just know that everyone called her Wei Wei."
"What's wrong, A.A.?" Tian Ming saw that her eyes were full of tears and her breath had quickened. Even the way she gazed at him was odd. A.A.'s smile was closer to a grimace.
"You can't even recall her name. Let me help you there. Her name was Ai Xiao Wei."
Tian Ming had once thought that after he'd found out the truth of the 10-dimensional universe, nothing else could ever shock him. He was wrong. We are moved most not by the grand mysteries of the universe, but by the emotional personal truths that define our individual pasts. Tian Ming's mind went blank. He had never imagined that the young girl he once knew would have any connection to IAA. who wasn't even born until more than two centuries after that long-ago summer. But A.A. was right. That young girl was indeed named Ai Xiaowei. Tianming hadn't really forgotten her name. He simply hadn't wanted to recall the details. Subconsciously, he still preferred to maintain the absurd illusion that the girl had perhaps been the young Cheng Xin.
How does A.A. know this?
Tianming stared at her and recalled the strange sense of familiarity that he always felt with her. This couldn't be just a lucky guess. Gradually, as he examined A.A., he saw traces of Wei Wei in her features. Back then, Wei Wei had only been 11, and even if Ai A.A. was the same person as Ai Xiaowei, an impossibility, he would have had a hard time recognizing her. It was inconceivable for A.A. to be from the common era. Although he had not researched A.A.'s past in detail, he could tell that her habits, speech, and general demeanor were without a doubt the products of the world 200 years after his own childhood. It was impossible to fake such characteristics. From what he knew of her, both by observing her through the sofons earlier and by spending every moment of every day with her for the past year, he was 100% certain on this point. Unless she went into hibernation as an 11-year-old. But that was the 1990s. Far too early for hibernation technology. Countless theories pressed themselves against Tianming's awareness, but none of them seemed plausible. He had to ask her for the truth, but he found himself incapable of even forming a coherent sentence.
How? You? What?
Stop asking questions, said A.A., and gently placed a hand over his mouth. Just listen, all right? There's something important that I've been meaning to tell you for a while, but I didn't know how to bring it up. You don't need to feel guilty about the destruction of humanity, my darling. The one who is responsible isn't you or Cheng Xin. It's me.
What are you talking about?
I've played a far larger role in these events than you realize. But I have to start from the common era. There's one more person involved in the complicated relationship between you and Cheng Xin during the common era. She's the lurker in that story. Her name was Ai Xiaowei, or Wei Wei, as everyone called her. She was a girl who loved fairy tales and who loved to fantasize. One summer break, she went to visit her aunt in another city. Her aunt lived in a tall building, one in a forest of other towers just like it. The first few days after her arrival, she still didn't know the neighborhood well. One day, she knocked on the door of an apartment she thought was her aunt's. When a strange boy a few years older opened the door, she realized that she had ended up in the wrong building. Terrified, she began to cry. The boy brought her into the living room and offered her some ice cream, which calmed her down.
As Tianming recalled the scene of meeting Wei Wei for the first time, the corners of his mouth turned up in a smile. The intense curiosity to find out the truth gave way to the warmth of reminiscence.
The boy offered to bring her home, but Wei Wei couldn't tell him the exact address. She only knew that it was in a building nearby. They checked out corresponding apartments in other towers in the area, but either no one answered, or something else in the building told her that it wasn't the right one. Finally, having run out of ideas, the boy brought her to the garden at the foot of his building, hoping that her aunt would come looking for her. They waited for hours. To pass the time, the boy told Wei Wei several stories. Wei Wei also told him some stories she had made up. They were having a good time when Wei Wei's aunt finally showed up to take her home.
A.A. paused and asked,
Tianming, do you remember the story that Wei Wei didn't finish telling you?
Tianming shook his head. He really couldn't recall such a detail.
The story was called The Star Giver. In it, a young princess met a strange boy on a tour of the kingdom. The boy told the princess that he was going to give her a star, but she didn't believe him and told the guards to drive him out of her sight. After a series of other plot twists, the princess's stepmother, the queen, wanted to kill her, and the princess escaped the palace. The queen chased after her at the head of an army. Just as the princess was about to give up all hope, a rope ladder dropped down from a star. The princess grabbed the ladder and climbed, higher and higher. The queen and her army also climbed up after her. Finally, a hand reached down from the star to pull the princess up. It was the strange boy. The two cut the rope ladder, and the queen and her army tumbled to their deaths. The princess and the boy lived happily ever after.
A long-buried memory gradually surfaced in Tianming's mind. He recalled this story, and much more. During the thousands of subjective years of his long sleep in Trisolaran captivity, this crude, childish story had made its appearance in his dreams under various guises. He had thought it an echo of his gift of a star to Cheng Xin. However, it now seemed that the truth was perhaps the opposite. He had come up with the idea of giving Cheng Xin a star, because subconsciously he remembered this story. It had changed the course of his life without his awareness.
After that, Wei Wei often went to look for you to play, and that summer break became one of her fondest memories. You probably remember that you and she had promised to meet the next summer. But the next year, when she returned to your city, you had already moved away. You lost touch after that.
AA was no longer her lighthearted, carefree self. Her voice was calm, but laced with the chill of autumn. A breeze blew by them, as sorrowful and lonesome as a night breeze on earth. Tianming felt his eyes grow moist.
And so ended a childhood friendship. More than 10 years passed, and Wei Wei graduated from college and found a job. Coincidentally, she ended up in the same city as you. She hadn't seen you since the summer she was 11. Occasionally, she thought about the boy she had known once and wondered how he was. What kind of work was he doing? Was he married? It was mere idle curiosity. But then, she and you met under completely unexpected circumstances.
We met again. Tianming was shocked into silence. He couldn't remember ever seeing the grown-up Ai Xiaowei. But as he stared at the sweet and sorrowful face before him, the vague sense of familiarity grew stronger. Finally, a hazy scene from deep in his memory came into focus.
A.A., I did see you. During the common era, I must have seen you somewhere.
Tianming's thoughts were thrown into chaos as he struggled to search through his memories for the owner of that familiar face. High school, college, his company, the hospital. Before leaving Earth, his life had been very simple, and he knew few women his age. But he couldn't remember anyone who looked like I.A.A., though he was sure now he had seen her somewhere.
Where?
Was she a student who had sat across the table from him at the library? Was she someone who had gotten on the elevator with him at work? Maybe a roommate that had shared an apartment? Faces flitted by his mind's eye, but none matched. He could recall only a fragment. A face that resembled AA's looking at him with a curious expression. But when was that? Where was it? Everything except that face had disappeared from his memories. AA laughed self-mockingly.
I was hoping you would remember at least a little.
It was an important event in your life. Possibly the most important. On that day,
she pointed in the direction of the setting sun.
You bought this star.
That day.
The memory, long sealed away, came to life, as clear as though it were yesterday. He had gotten the text from Hu Wen, and then he asked Dr. Zhang for permission to leave the hospital. He took a taxi to the UNESCO Beijing office, walked into the headquarters for the Stars Our Destination project, and met the director of the project as well as Dr. He.
Wait, wasn't there someone else?
Who? Think.
He walked into the office and the first person he saw was...
Oh, God.
Could it be?
Tianming sucked in a breath. He pointed at AA and stuttered.
You were the receptionist, but how?
That wasn't me.
AA shook her head.
That was your childhood friend, Ai Xiaowei, my previous incarnation.
Tianming had no idea what AA meant by previous incarnation. He thought back to that day.
Yes.
The receptionist was especially solicitous, bringing him tea and making sure he was comfortable, stopping from time to time to gaze at him, sometimes curiously, and sometimes admiringly. He couldn't remember much else. Her extraordinary beauty should have left him with a deeper impression, but he was a dying man, his mood ashen, his mind on Cheng Xin. He had never thought of the receptionist after that, and he certainly couldn't have guessed that the woman had anything to do with IAA.
To you, she was only a stranger passing through your life, no different from the thousands who brush by you in the street every day. But that encounter with you changed her life. Xiaowei didn't recognize you at first. When you told her that you wanted to buy a star, her reaction was that you were some rich man's son who had run out of ways to spend money. Though superficially enthusiastic, she laughed at you behind your back. Later, when you explained to Dr. He that you were buying the star for a woman, she remembered the story she had told you. As she looked at you some more, she thought you looked familiar, but you refused to reveal your name. She only knew that you were buying the star for a woman named Cheng Xin. By the time she finally got up the courage to ask you if you were who she thought you were, Dr. He had already taken you away outside the city to look for the star you had bought. That was the last time she laid eyes on you. Later, Wei Wei figured out your name based on the information you left in the files, and she knew she was right. She thought you had somehow gotten rich, and she didn't want to bother you. Then, the next day, Dr. He told her that he could tell you were suffering from some terminal illness, and probably didn't have too much time left. She felt such pity for you and wanted to find you. But other than your name, she didn't know anything about you. Finally, do you know what she did? She had the brilliant idea of getting on a website called Facelook and searching for your name. Since your name was pretty rare, she managed to find your page.
I don't think you mean Facelook, Tianming said. I think it was Facebook.
I think you're right. What kind of website was it?
It was a...
As Tianming struggled to explain the ancient technology, he also tried to remember when he had signed up for such a thing. He didn't remember doing much with it. It probably just contained some basic information about himself.
I see,
said AA.
I think you also linked yourself to a friend named Hu Wen. He seemed to be a good friend in college.
My only friend, Tianming interrupted.
He was a clever businessman, and he had thousands of friends on Facebook. After a few days, Wei Wei finally managed to get in touch with Hu Wen and got your contact information. She rushed to the hospital, but found out that Cheng Xin had already taken you away. The official explanation was that Cheng Xin had taken you to the United States for advanced treatment. Wei Wei thought it was the most beautiful love story she had ever heard, but she didn't know the truth. Anyway, she was deeply moved by your hopeless romanticism. And perhaps from that day she fell in love with you and vowed to find you. She didn't know what she hoped to accomplish, only that she wanted to see you again. She couldn't have known that you had already been launched into deep space. The rest of her life was rather tragic. For the next 3 or 4 years, she searched for you. She quit her job and went to America to look for Cheng Xin. But by then, Cheng Xin had gone into hibernation, and she made no progress. Finally, she heard a rumor that you had also entered hibernation to go to the future. Wei Wei had no way to go to the future, so she had to give up. Later, she made a decent life for herself. She started an internet business and made some money. A man fell in love with her, and though he had little money, he was almost as romantic as you, which moved her. She became his lover and enjoyed a period of happiness. Soon, however, the man was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and she gave him all her money to find a cure. Unfortunately, that turned out to be just a scam, and the man disappeared with the funds. I imagine if he hadn't reminded her of you, she wouldn't have fallen for such a simple trick.
Tianming sighed, and AA's voice grew even more somber.
The worst is yet to come. Wei Wei tried to recover, but she found out that the con man had given her HIV. After a few years of suffering, she died.
Tianming would never have imagined such a terrible end for his friend. He remembered again that happy woman and her sunny disposition as he opened the door to the office of the Stars Our Destination project. How could he have known at that moment the fondness between them in their past, or the unpredictable future that lay ahead?
She knew that her life was ruined, but she refused to accept it. Absolutely refused.
AA's eyes glistened with tears.
When she died, she was just over 30, childless. She sold what little property she had left to preserve some stem cells in a gene bank. She hoped that she could be cloned in the future and live a new life. At the time, many harbored similar hopes, and there must have been millions who could not afford to go to the future, but who spent what money they had to leave their cells in gene banks across the world. Later, during the Great Ravine and the Crisis Era, no one cared about them and no one bothered to clone them. Most of these cells were destroyed in the intervening years, and it was by pure luck that Ai Xiaowei's cells were preserved. Based on the contract she signed, her cells would only be preserved for 200 years. If no one was interested in cloning her by then, the cells would be destroyed. 200 years later, in the middle of the Deterrence Era, humanity had returned to a stable track, and humanism and associated values were once again on the rise. Some people formed a genetic protection league and argued that the cells waiting to be cloned were all potential humans with the right to life, and they raised some money to clone us. Lacking funds to clone everyone, they were forced to clone only about 1 to 2% of the surviving cells. Maybe because I was pretty, I was picked. And so, 200 years later, I carried on the dream of my previous incarnation.
Why do you keep using that term? Tianming asked.
It's just a habit for us clones. If our donors were still alive at the time of our birth, we'd call them parents. But if our donors were dead, we'd call them previous incarnations. Maybe it's a way for all of us, orphans really, to find for ourselves some roots in time. My previous incarnation left me a long letter in which she told me her life story in detail. She also reminded me not to be foolish and to live an easygoing life. This was how I became familiar with your story from the Common Era and how I knew about the star named DX3906. It was why I chose it as the topic for my dissertation.
AA fell silent, as though she found it hard to broach the next topic. 7 centuries worth of fate's vicissitudes churned around them. What had seemed a coincidental meeting turned out to be a love sealed in a past life. At that moment, they each seemed to hear the heartbeats of the other. To break the awkward mood, AA laughed carelessly.
Please don't misunderstand me, Tianming. Previous incarnation is just a term we use, but I'm not I Xiao Wei. I'm certainly not that foolish. I just want to let you know that you've never been alone. Even in the years when you felt most isolated, someone was always thinking of you. When your frozen brain was hurtling through the darkness of space, someone was searching for you back on Earth.
She stopped herself from uttering the sentence she really wanted to say next.
It wasn't Cheng Xin.
After a long silence, Tianming whispered,
I'm Jean-Christophe, and she's my Antoinette.
After a while, AA took a deep breath and continued to reveal her secrets.
Actually, I was responsible for waking Cheng Xin. After I found out that Cheng Xin had gone into hibernation during the Common Era, I tried to look for her. The year of the Swordholder election, I finally located her record. She wasn't an important figure, and the government had no plans to wake her. But I wanted her to be revived so that I could meet your first love, a woman my previous incarnation never got to meet. That was also when I discovered the 2 planets orbiting DX3906. One of them the world we are standing on now. Since hundreds of extraterrestrial planets were discovered every year, most people paid no attention to such news. However, I sent the discovery to a reporter friend who dug up the story of how Cheng Xin had been given a star nearly 3 centuries earlier. She wrote up the story with enough exaggerations to arouse the interest of the public and the government. As a result, I managed to get Cheng Xin awakened from hibernation. I made sure that I was assigned to help her so that I could get to know her better. And unexpectedly, we became friends. I never intended to generate so much public fervor as to make her the sword holder.
Blood drained from Tianming's face. He never could have imagined that Cheng Xin's friend was responsible for her fate.
I'm sorry, Tianming. I was just curious. I really didn't mean to.
AA's voice trailed off, her expression full of sorrow. Tianming couldn't speak. He tried to imagine how everything would have been different if AA hadn't interfered, or if she had awakened Cheng Xin a few years later. Even if some other Cheng Xin-like candidate stood for election, maybe Thomas Wade's gamble would have paid off, and the Earth wouldn't have been destroyed. Then perhaps Cheng Xin could have lived out the rest of her life peacefully on Earth. Or maybe.
I've carried this secret with me for so many years. In a way, the one most responsible for the destruction of Earth wasn't Cheng Xin or you, but me. I tried to comfort Cheng Xin after the disaster, but a lot of things I said were for myself. If I hadn't been so curious, things would have been so different.
Tianming closed his eyes, looking somber as he tried to remember something. AA, her face pale, said,
You can blame me, but please don't blame I Xiao Wei. She had nothing to do with any of this. She wanted to tell you.
No, Tianming interrupted her.
I won't blame you. I was just thinking now that if someone else had been the candidate for the Swordholder, and Wade tried to kill them, I would have saved them too. There is a cause for every effect, AA, but not all causes are responsible for all effects. To trace all causes and all effects is to end up in a twisted web with no end. No single person can make decisions independently. Every choice is the result of changes and inputs from everyone else. Viewed from a higher vantage point, Cheng Xin was chosen by all of humanity to be the Swordholder. And her choice was humanity's choice. Her values, humanity's values. Viewed from specifics, Cheng Xin made her choice because you woke her. You woke her because of me. I was sent into space by Cheng Xin. Cheng Xin went into hibernation because of me. And the one who started it all was Wade, who wanted to kill Cheng Xin. It's a tangled mess. Stepping back even farther, Ye Wenjie, Luo Ji, and Zhang Beihai all could have made different choices in history and changed the course of humanity. Who knows what could have happened? But it's pointless to debate such hypotheticals, because we have to live with the facts. Humanity is gone. No, not quite. Based on what you've told me about Guan Yifan, it seems that the galactic humans have already pioneered a new path. But the Earth and the solar system are no more. And that is an unchangeable fact.
True,
said AA.
No one can change that.
But that isn't everything. Tianming grew excited. Perhaps the Earth and the solar system are only insignificant beginnings. 1,000 years from now, 10,000 or even longer, those who look back on the destruction of Earth may see it only as another fall of Constantinople. Do you know about what happened there? AA nodded, but then shook her head again.
I read about it in middle school textbooks, but I don't know any details.
I knew only a rough outline at first, said Tianming. But while on the Tri-Solaran fleet, I had endless time to devote to reading and thinking about the fate of humanity, and I found history to be an unpredictable guide. More than 12 centuries ago, in the year 1453, Constantinople fell to the forces of the Ottoman Empire, thereby extinguishing the Eastern Roman Empire, which had lasted more than 1,000 years. As the fortress of Europe fell, the entire continent trembled before the might of the Ottoman invaders. No one at the time could have thought that this tragedy would turn out to be the catalyst for the rebirth of Europe and the beginning of modern civilization. Many scholars from Constantinople fled to Western Europe, bringing with them the best that Hellenistic Roman culture had to offer and facilitating the start of the Renaissance. Also, since the Ottoman Empire lay between Europe and Asia, European merchants had to find new ways to travel to India and China, thereby opening the Age of Exploration. Only a century later, Spanish, Portuguese, Dutch, and English explorers had already circumnavigated the globe, creating in the process a new civilization capable of wonders that would have been unimaginable to the Romans, let alone the denizens of the Middle Ages. With that history in mind, who can say that the destruction of the solar system isn't the beginning of a far more brilliant and magnificent galactic age? AA's eyes also glowed with excitement as they enthusiastically debated the future of humanity. Maybe humans would hop from one planetary system to another, spreading colonies across the whole Milky Way and founding new republics, empires, and federations. Or maybe they would build a super fleet containing billions and billions of ships and wander forever among the stars. Maybe their civilization would advance to be nearly like gods, capable of reversing time and changing history. In the end, Tianming returned to the present and laughed self-mockingly. All our speculation is useless. We will never leave this black domain for the rest of our lives. And if there is going to be a galactic era, we will have turned to dust long before its advent. Still, I must thank you, AA. Tianming's gaze on her was full of love. You liberated me from the shackles of the past. My love for Chengxin weighed me down, as did my guilt over humanity's destruction. But as long as we did what we believed was right, there's no reason to bind ourselves with the empty sentiments of duty. Not you, and not me. Let's seize the present and cherish the joys of the future. All right? AA laughed, though tears spilled from the corners of her eyes. They embraced, closer than they'd ever been before. After a long time, AA gently whispered to Tianming,
"At the end of Xia Wei's letter to me, she asked me to tell you something if I ever managed to see you."
A message that had traversed 700 years in the stream of time was about to be retrieved. Tianming's heart beat wildly.
She said, "I wish you a happy life."
Tianming said nothing, but AA felt something wet fall against her bare shoulders.
"We will lead a happy life," Tianming said.
Night didn't last long on Planet Blue. Rosy fingers appeared over the eastern horizon, and the long-suffering lovers who had only just truly fallen in love were bathed in a gentle, warm glow. All around them, the vegetation of Planet Blue stretched and faced east to begin its morning cantata. Quaint and amiable, like a celebration of romance composed just for the two of them. The pair of lovers, absorbed as they were by each other, did not notice a moving dot of light disappearing into the brightening sky along with the fading stars. On that ship, traveling at the reduced speed of light in this black domain, only a second had passed. Chengxin and Guan Yifan had still not recovered from the terror and shock of the sudden expansion of the death lines. Yifan cradled Chengxin's head, and their faces were pressed against each other. They were like that bottle the Tibetan boy tossed into the river, washed downstream by the heartless passage of time, not knowing where they would end up. The two pairs of lovers, divided by the river of time, grew farther and farther apart. Perhaps they would never meet again. Perhaps. Part 2. The Way of Tea. Planet Blue Era. Year 63. Our Star. Our World. Another sunset. The sun, half hidden behind the mountains, dimmed gradually. The cantata of Planet Blue's life continued as usual. Everything looked pretty much as it did that evening of conversation 61 Planet Blue years ago, about the same as 40 Earth years. Our protagonists, however, were no longer young. Silver-haired IAA, wrapped in a woven grass mat and wearing a peaceful smile on her wrinkled face, lay unmoving in a long hole dug in the ground. She took up the left side of the hole, leaving the right side empty. Yun Tianming, his back bent with age, sat next to the grave, deep in thought. This morning, his wife had finally shuffled off this mortal coil and entered the long sleep, and he was about to join her. He recalled the first time he had seen her, so many years ago. He relived their first embrace, that night when they first revealed their hearts to each other, the years after filled with joy and labor. He recited the words they had carved into the cliffs last year.
"We lived a happy life together."
He remembered a benediction from years earlier, so long ago that it seemed to come from the beginning of history. "I wish you a happy life."
"Have I lived a happy life?"
after a lonely childhood and youth, after the time of despair in the hospital, after an inhuman existence as a frozen brain plunging through the depths of space. He had endured decades of torture aboard the Tri-Solaran fleet, a long nightmare that lasted tens of thousands of subjective years. Then came the even more excruciating experience of watching helplessly as his people were hunted to the verge of extinction. Finally, with the help of that magical ring, he left the Tri-Solarans and came to this star, where he and Chung Xin had promised to meet. But it was a different woman who greeted him. He learned of the complicated web fate had woven between them, fell in love with her, and then spent the second half of his life by her side. Measured by material standards, the second half of his life wasn't happy either. They spent the first 2 years of their time together on Planet Blue in relative ease, but in the third year, the magical ring vanished. The ring wasn't solid. It was made of a glowing strand of insubstantial fiber. Like that mini-universe, the ring had been a gift from the spirit.
Find the lurker and counter it. The ring will help you.
When he woke from a last nightmare involving the spirit, he deciphered a few more of the itty abstractions planted in his mind by the spirit. Perhaps triggered by his awakening mind, the magical ring suddenly appeared on his finger. Its silvery glow was like a memory of the spirit itself. He had spent several days figuring out how to operate the ring. It was controlled by his mind alone, and exhibited signs of being powered by incredible technologies. For example, the ring could open the entrance to the mini-universe, decipher and control the computer systems on the Tri-Solaran ship, modify the structure of the ship to endow it with unparalleled speed and other features, materialize any small objects he desired. In the end, he discovered only a tiny portion of its full capabilities. He knew that to unlock the full potential of the ring would require speaking to it in itty abstractions, an ability that he lacked. That the spirit had given him such a powerful tool was puzzling. Sure, the spirit itself was probably just an artificial intelligence that needed his help to fight the mysterious lurker. But why did the spirit think he could shoulder such a burden? How could a single human being, not much more significant than a wisp of ionized gas in the grand universe, be expected to counter a devil that had destroyed godlike civilizations? It was absurd. Slowly, more locked-away memories came back. Back then, as he lay half-crazed, half-comatose, he hadn't agreed to the spirit's request. Even in his semi-conscious state, he wasn't so deluded as to think he could war against such a powerful dark civilization. He recalled the conversation between them.
"Why are you telling me these things? I have no wish to be a seeker."
"I'm running out of time. With each passing second, I grow weaker. This universe is too sparsely populated. After I leave you, I don't know when I'll meet another life suitable for the task."
"I'm not suitable. It's an impossible task. I refuse."
"I don't need your assent."
"I don't understand."
"You'll understand eventually."
He had never understood what the spirit meant. Once, he had thought that the spirit had seen something deep in his mind, suggesting that he would eventually agree to this impossible mission. By the time he finally left the Tri-Solarans behind, crossing the galaxy in his light-speed ship, he had been full of courage and idealism, vowing to destroy this evil cosmic Satan. But in the end, the Black Domain trapped him on this tiny planet, and he had lost all will to fight, hoping only to find some happiness in the rest of his life with his beloved. Maybe his change of mind was the reason the magical ring had disappeared. Or maybe something in this Black Domain planetary system diffused the ring's power. After all, E equals MC squared. If the speed of light decayed to only a few kilometers per second, perhaps energy was also greatly reduced. Tianming was no theoretical physicist and couldn't work out the answer for himself. But in this world where light was incredibly slow, anything could happen. Even the all-knowing spirit probably couldn't have predicted everything. The same phenomenon that took away the ring's power was probably also responsible for draining all the power from his spaceship. After the disappearance of the ring, he and AA had no more access to advanced technology. For the last few decades, they had lived a pre-industrial, no, almost a Stone Age existence. Their only way out would have been to enter the mini-universe, but they had sealed off that path themselves. Many years later, when Cheng Xin landed on this planet, her guesses regarding the life of Tianming and AA were partially correct. At first, AA refused to enter the mini-universe. After hearing Tianming's story, the small universe seemed to her more like a tomb than a gift. She didn't want to cross an ocean of tens of billions of years to witness the end of the universe. She had the premonition that if they entered the mini-universe, Tianming would be obsessed with the spirit's mission and go to the end of all that is known and unknown to fight against the lurker and save this dimension-reduced cosmos. She refused to go in because she didn't wish to see the man she loved accept an impossible task and collapse under the weight of failure. Tianming, of course, couldn't abandon her and enter the mini-universe by himself. And so they waited one day, then another. Later, after the ring on Tianming's finger vanished, it was impossible for AA to enter the mini-universe at all. The ring was the only way for Tianming to alter the entrance restrictions, and only he and Cheng Xin were authorized. AA would forever be kept out. He thought it might be possible for him to enter the mini-universe and alter the authorization from within, but he dared not leave AA for even one moment. He knew that time flowed inside the mini-universe independently of the grand universe, and even if he came back out as soon as he entered, millions of years might have already passed. Waiting by the entrance for him, AA would have long turned to dust. He couldn't abandon her, and he feared being alone even more. The only choice was for them to grow old together on the planet. In the third year of their time on Planet Blue, AA became pregnant. Without the protection of the magical ring, it was very difficult to ensure a healthy pregnancy. After 2 months, AA suffered a miscarriage. She lost so much blood that it was a miracle she survived. The experience injured her, and she couldn't get pregnant after that. Tianming thought this was a blessing in disguise. If they had children, without access to advanced technology, it would have been difficult for them to thrive on this desolate planet. Moreover, they would have to resort to sibling incest to reproduce, and genetic defects would accumulate. He could just imagine how, after a few generations, their descendants would have lost all traces of civilization and lived a nasty, brutish life no different from beasts. He shuddered at the very prospect. And since he knew that several hundred light years away, galactic humans, the fortunate descendants of the crew of gravity, were continuing and extending human civilization in new colonies, he didn't feel that he had the duty of ensuring the survival of the species. He and AA had loved each other and had lived a life together. Was it a happy life? Materially, they had lived like the most primitive tribes. Spiritually, their days had been filled with pain and terror, the terror of losing the other and having to go on alone. When sleeping, they clutched each other. When awake, they never let the other out of sight. Even not seeing the other person for a few moments was a cause for panic. Even the smallest cold in the other person felt like knives twisting in the heart. There was no 7-year itch in their marriage. Each day, they gazed at each other's faces in tenderness, no matter how wrinkled their skin grew or how white their hair turned, because they knew that each look might be the last. Yet the pain and terror were also mixed with indescribable tenderness and sweetness. There was no love in the universe, no romance in the galaxy, that could compare to theirs. Yes, they had lived a happy life. But the last day had come. This morning, after AA fell asleep in his lap, she did not wake up again. She died peacefully, with a smile softening her face. He didn't feel much sadness, knowing he was going to follow her soon. There was nothing holding him to this world anymore. He should have died long ago, 7 centuries earlier to be exact, in that euthanasia room. He had been granted a reprieve of 700 years and lived a longer life than anyone. Cheng Xin accepted.
The only person who loves me in this world is dead. There's nothing for me here.
For a few moments, he had the thought of entering the mini-universe to get a look at that mysterious shelter from the ravages of time. But an old man's fear seized him, and he was terrified at the thought of being parted from his wife in time and space, of dying alone at the end of the universe, not even having his wife's corpse to comfort him. He was an old, dying man, weak, powerless. There was nothing he could do in the mini-universe. He wanted to go in peace. Curiosity died in him. He already knew too much. He knew what the end of the universe would look like. Millions of glowing galaxies would flatten into a magnificent scroll, which would roll up into an endless silvery thread, which would shrink into a bright dot and then wink out. Even the darkness would then vanish. There was nothing after the end. Nothing. He saw the future of the universe. There was no heat death, no big crunch, and certainly no new big bang. The universe would become nothing and disappear into the void. This was the truth about dimension reduction. The destruction of every dimension devoured an infinite amount of matter and energy, leading to nothingness.
Vanity of vanities. All is vanity.
He remembered a poem he read in college a long time ago.
This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper.
None of this had anything to do with him.